Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Hughes.
I'm Jupe Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the importance of a culture of honor. Why is this sort of thing important for churches, for organizations, even families? And how can it help us kind of fight against some of the challenges of radical individualism and suspicion and various things that are driving us apart in society? All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to the Engaging Culture Podcast. In the spirit of creating a culture of honor in this moment, I will introduce my esteemed co-host as Pastor Josh Ute. Good morning.
Good morning, Pastor Brian.
Thank you. How are you? Never mind. Don't answer that. Pastor Judah Sanders, how are you?
I am well.
All right. Glad to have you guys. We just took last week off because we did not have anything to talk about.
Because we wanted to.
So we decided to take a break. I'm sure that made last week really terrible for all of you listeners. So we apologize for
all
that.
All six
but
of you.
We're back. Josh, what was your best thing?
My daughter's soccer season has come to an end, and that is my best. No. we did a little end of year party for the team, and watching the camaraderie of the players, but also how the relationships are built through sport. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the coach that I was coaching alongside is that he was very intentional with how he treated players, with a lot of respect, but also just a lot of gentleness. And you can see that paying dividends at the end of the year. We ended the year on a high note, just crushing teams. But it wasn't really about the win-loss records. We always talked about how we played games.
Yeah.
And just watching my daughter thrive in an environment like that, where she's making good friends, she's sharing her faith with these other friends. I mean, she had a really respectful conversation with one of the friends who's Islamic, and they're talking about, well, Jesus is a prophet. And she said, well, actually, I think that Jesus is, you know, son of God. And but they were super respectful with one another, and it went both ways. And both Alma and Dahlia and Kaya, they were having this really wonderful conversation.
Model for us children,
and it was so much better than what most adults do with each other. It was just a very like. But that environment's created because the coach, like, preaches the gentleness and camaraderie. And so everybody is for one another and is really sweet with one another. It was just very cool.
Love it. Love it. Very cool. All right. Pastor Judah, how about you?
Okay, so for my best thing, I have to give a little bit of context. So some of us are familiar with historically Black colleges and universities. So these are universities that were founded before Black people were allowed to go to mainstream universities. And at HBCUs, there is fraternities and sororities like most colleges, Black fraternities and sororities, and there are nine kind of prominent ones. And historically, those nine prominent fraternities have had lots of complicated relationships with each other, a lot of competition, a lot of beef. And I am a member of one of those fraternities. I'm a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. And I was brought into the organization by a mentor of mine who is really about building bridges across communities. And I really watched him model that. This last week, he went to the hospital, and it's not looking good. It's looking like days.
Yikes.
And so we couldn't go into the hospital to see him. But they put out a call and said, hey, everybody come out to the hospital and we're going to just be in the parking lot. We're going to pray for him together.
Hmm.
And so we all came out, and I was blown away by the number of other organizations that were there, the members from other organizations that were there, and folks who spoke so highly of how he looked after them, loved on them, was so kind to them. So much so that they see him as a brother, even if, you know, they're in another one of the fraternities. And it really just spoke to me about the impact of reaching across, and whatever a cross looks like for you, right? In this case, it was across a fraternity sorority spectrum, but whether that's across political lines, across religious lines, as you were just talking about, Josh, with Dahlia, that there's real impact. There were probably 70 or 80 people in the parking lot. Like the nurses were like coming out of the hospital confused, especially because we're all in our fraternity colors. So it very much looks like a gang war. But it was just a beautiful moment. And that was the best thing I saw this week.
I love
it. Yeah. What about you?
That's pretty great. My best thing was our men's retreat. We had our men's retreat this last weekend, 115 some odd guys at Camp Del Oro up in Grass Valley. And it was just a really cool time. Like, we just had a great group of guys there. Pastor Rodney preached and it was terrific. Pastor Dylan and Rayon were there leading us in worship along with Blake and Darius. And yeah, just great facility. Had a wonderful time in kind of the small group that I was part of. And our men's leadership team, not only do they just do a phenomenal job, but they're just great people who I love hanging out with. And, you know, there are not a lot of people who I would want to spend a weekend in a, you know, room that's a concrete floor and bunk beds and that is it, and hike to the bathroom at 2 a.m. But I'd do it with these guys. We had a lot of fun. And most other people who came to the camp had nicer accommodations than we did. Just so we're clear, for those who come next year, there are better options than that. But it was a really, really powerful time. And it was just cool to see, like, I had a conversation with one guy who just was noting, like, everybody here wants to be here. And everybody here is really, like, all in on what's going on. And worship was powerful, and dudes were just sharing in really deep ways in their groups. And it was just, it was a great event. And I came home tired, but really fired up about what God is doing among the men at Bridgeway. And I just can't say enough about our leaders and how great they are.
Wow. So, that's what's up.
It is. We'll be right back. Well, we are back, and we are spending the bulk of the time of today's episode talking about this concept of a culture of honor. This sort of language gets used a decent bit, both behind the scenes and kind of up front at Bridgeway, as we talk about the importance of being able to honor one another, hold people in esteem, and just have general respect for the different people who lead us and are a part of what we're doing. But I think what we wanted to talk about today was why a culture of honor matters and how it can actually be a helpful antidote for a lot of the kind of just suspicion and tribalism and kind of reactionary nature of life in the world today. And we ultimately want to talk about how can a culture of honor be really healthy and what are some things we need to be careful of to keep it from getting unhealthy. Now, Josh, before we started this segment, I said I was going to throw to you for a definition, and then I stepped on it in my intro.
You sure did.
By giving a couple of kind of ways I would define a culture of honor.
Yeah, let me correct you.
Please do. What are some aspects of a culture of honor from your perspective?
Well, I think really to start off, there's an intentionality between the culture of honor. So it's respecting and affirming one another's God-given worth, but also responsibilities. You could say it as authority as well, because I do think there is some of that, like honor your mother and father. There's some authority in there. But I think the real piece about a culture of honor is that we are affirming and recognizing that others have inherent worth in their identity, not just their performance. And it's honoring to them. And Romans 12 rather, says to outdo one another in honoring one another, like to really go above and beyond. And it's not to be like over the top and, you know, kind of like ridiculous side of that, but it is to say that there's a lot that we can honor with one another. And it helps, because when we honor one another, it takes away some of that relational casualness that creeps in to where we disrespect unintentionally one another. And so I think those are all parts of it, but really it's that intentional value and respect and affirmation.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. Pastor Judah, what would you add?
Well, I think when it's important to think about what culture is, right? And culture really is agreement. It's kind of a shared way of doing life. It is shared values and beliefs and practices. And so when I think about a culture of honor, I think about the agreement between people, between a community, to prioritize loving and respecting and engaging with each other in kind of the healthiest ways, and in ways that I think hold on to a fundamental truth that we're all image bearers. And so culture of honor to me is a theological concept that is grounded in the fact that we know we are reflecting, and every single human good, bad, ugly, short, tall, every single person is an image bearer and is the beloved creation of God. And when we think about, I use this example a lot, but the Mona Lisa in the Louvre is very small and actually quite ugly, in my opinion. It is not that spectacular. And the Louvre does all of these things to protect it, to treat it well, to make sure that it lasts. There's humidity control, light control. Only certain types of lights can be used. There's a limit on how many people can be in the room with the Louvre at one time. And it's not because the painting is this drop-dead gorgeous painting. It's because of who made it. And so I think a culture of honor is about us saying, the way that I treat you has everything to do with who made you and who loved you and who paid for you, right? Mm. You're very, very expensive. We treat things a certain way based on their value. If you buy, you know, a pair of shoes and you pay $20 for them at Ross, that's going to be different than if you buy, you know, a $2,000 pair of Gucci shoes because of what it costs.
As you do, as you often do.
I do not. The one pair of Gucci shoes I have, I wouldn't talk about I got them.
I just had a visceral reaction to paying more for a pair of shoes than my mortgage. And it just...
I want to talk about how you got a mortgage under $2,000. Help me.
I would not be able to enjoy shoes that cost that much.
Years ago. Yeah,
that
really that's helps. It.
So anyway, I think that that's what a culture of honor is. And I think that it is... There's the intentionality piece that is what makes it culture as opposed to just the idea of honor or a value of honor.
Well, and I think along those lines with kind of the Mona Lisa example is really helpful because it's that sense of, you're valuable because of who made you and what you are. And I do think that a healthy culture of honor, whether it's a church or not, begins with honoring God.
Yeah.
That when we esteem God highly, we will esteem those he's created highly. Not on the same level, of course, but there is a sacredness and a holiness to each person because we are created by God.
Yeah,
and I think that breeds a sense of honor and respect and care that, unfortunately, I think in our world today and really throughout history is really easy to discard.
Yeah.
Right?
Particularly when we disagree or when we live differently or when we don't understand each other. Yeah. And I think that a part of what we have to do is say that our culture of honor and our priority of honor happens regardless. Right. And so that means for everybody from the pastor that you admire and respect and love and has changed your life to the person in prison for doing some heinous crime, both are image bearers. And like, what does it look like to honor both? And so I think at some point we'll need to have a conversation about the difference between a culture of honor and like accountability and like challenge and all of that, but still this kind of fundamental baseline.
So we want to talk about culture of honor in kind of all contexts, but we're a church.
Right.
And briefly, I think it might be helpful for us to share our own experience with how we've experienced a culture of honor in church context, maybe even some of the ways either we've seen it practiced well or like in my case, this is a concept I've had to kind of come around to in some ways that I'm so suspicious of kind of overly exalted leadership that I've kind of overcorrected to like, you know, I've had to adjust to people calling me Pastor Brian and I still like, when someone calls me Pastor Kylie, I'm like, that's just too much. Yeah. But what have you seen, Josh, in your own church background in terms of how a culture of honor is practiced or not?
So the church that I grew up in when I was in elementary school was highly Pentecostal, highly charismatic. And the titles did not matter. Everybody was everything all the time. And so it was super relational.
Hmm.
And when we left that church for other reasons, and we ended up at an EV free church, which is a little bit more conservative, there was definitely a hierarchy that was involved. And so my experience is pretty extreme on both ends, where we had the senior pastor of the small charismatic church who wore jeans, a Hawaiian shirt, and flip-flops and was still a hippie and I think who's just sober. And that's really the only thing different for him. And then going to somewhere where he's in business attire, he's you know, very authoritative. He's writing books. He's got this higher education piece. And so what I ended up really experiencing was two vastly different cultures with honor. Where one was, hey, we're all just buddies here, to the other, like, no, there's a respect level that is demanded in a lot of ways. And so my experience has been pretty all over the place with it.
Sounds like it.
And I think what I attach to in both, one, with the relational side, I do like we're all brothers and sisters in Christ, that we are all in this together, and that aspect of community-based discipleship was really powerful for me.
Yeah.
But then what I also really appreciated about the respect level is like, no, there's appropriate ways to engage with one another. And there are responsibilities that, you know, senior pastors especially have.
Yeah.
That's just different. And when we treat them as like just any old person, I think we actually forget the burden that they carry.
Yeah.
And when we forget the burden that we carry, we become very loose with our opinions. We become very loose with, you know, oh, we should just do it this way, and very flippant in our conversations. And while Pastor Lance is one of the most like relationally accessible guys, he does not carry himself as, you have to talk to me this way or that way. He does absorb a lot of these flippant comments as a little bit more painful, I might say, than people intend.
Yeah.
In that it's like, hey, this is my baby. This is the thing I sleep and dream about and obsess about for my entire life. And people forget that.
Yeah.
That,
and make just sort of flippant comments, right, kind of feeling like they're entitled to that sort of thing, which
or
can
like
be,
it just doesn't matter. It's like, and they don't intend to be wounding.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I just hate the worship here. It's like, ooh.
Okay.
You know,
so Judah, how about you? What has been some of your experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, what I go back to is that the development of the Black church in the United States, and you know, for decades and for centuries, Black enslaved people were taught a theology and a sociology that dehumanized them, and so the Black church developed as the one space where they could really reclaim their divine worth. And that really impacted the culture within the Black church. And so, for example, in Black churches, kind of no matter who we're talking about, we always add the title brother or sister, brother Josh, brother Ryan, sister Ashley. And a part of that is because these were people who were told that they were three-fourths a human, who were told that that they were, you know, animals, right?
Yeah.
And so in the Black church, there's this huge culture of honor, not just because of that, but also particularly with our pastors, because in Black spaces, your pastor was all you had. You could not afford a therapist. You probably couldn't go to the doctor. You couldn't afford a realtor. You would go to your church and your pastor for all of that. And so there's this reverence for church leaders and church people, and the idea that that space, the worship in there, reflects kind of this communal ethic, really, of care.
Yeah.
And that has very much influenced the way that I think about certainly church community, and then even community outside of church.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd never really thought about kind of where the pastor was all of that.
Yeah.
And that is what led to kind of that higher sense of honor for the pastor. Because, yeah, they're not just someone you come and listen to on Sunday.
Correct.
They're helping you with this. They're helping you
everything.
With that.
Absolutely.
All of it.
Everything.
I'm not sure why this is, but I have always been very suspicious of environments where there is this kind of like overly exalted view of the leader, whether it's in Christian spaces or not. That there's part of me that's, I don't know if I'm just too cynical. I don't know if it's just I've seen too many stories of like leaders who, you know, can fire up the people and then they're totally different behind the scenes or whatever. But even in my own, you know, church upbringing, I mean, the very first church I attended, you know, the senior pastor introduced themselves by their first name and said, I'm one of the pastors here. You know, the first church I worked at, the senior pastor signed his emails to the congregation with just his first name and no title. And there was never, like, we knew who the pastors were, but there was never this sense of, like, you didn't refer to each other by those titles. Now, we knew who was in charge, and it's not to say it was this, like, flat organizational structure. Right. It was not. But it was very casual in terms of language.
Yeah.
And I've had to kind of grow a little bit in seeing the value of going, no, I actually think that that brother-sister language, well, that's not necessarily the language I am inclined to use. There is really value in it, that sense of referring to your pastors as pastor this, pastor that, and even that sense of authority of going, we are the pastors of this congregation, not just one of the pastors here, is something I've had to adjust to.
Well, and I think so much of it is deeply cultural, because I think in a lot of spaces, your pastor kind of just is your pastor because you have all of this other access, or there's all of these other roles that multiple people are playing that are valuable.
Yeah.
I think when all those roles are housed in one person, it's a different thing. I also think that there's value in, like, particularly in the church space, in saying, while outside of this space, there's a lot of different ways that we have to navigate. When we are here, we are prioritizing the respect of one another.
Yeah.
And, like, what does that look like? And so I actually think that that shows up a lot of different ways in other cultures that are just less explicit, right? So when I think about being at Bridgeway, and I think about how many times I have been in line for the cafe and I've seen somebody get in front to pay for somebody else. That's culture of honor, right?
Yeah.
I think about how much the ways that people check in on each other when they get to Bridgeway, you know, in the lobby, that's culture of honor.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are a lot of different ways that can show up.
And what I like about what you just said there is that idea that, like, honor flows in all directions.
Yeah.
It doesn't just flow up to the top. And I actually think that's such a huge element of having a healthy honor culture, is to go, we all want to try to give more honor than we receive.
Yeah.
And that goes for the three of us. That goes for Pastor Lance. That goes for people on our elder board, that it's not just, all right, let's all
you
of
honor
us
me.
Honor the people above us, though that is part of it. But there is a sense of honor that goes in all directions.
There's also a culture of honor here in the way that we prioritize taking care of staff and volunteers.
Yeah.
And so the ways that even Bridgeway just kind of consistently does assessments about, like, hey, can our people take care of themselves with, you know, how they're being cared for, how they're being compensated? Are our volunteers being burnt out, or are we, like, going out of our way to make sure that they have what they need?
Yeah.
That's culture of honor too.
Yep. After the break, we're going to talk about what a culture of honor isn't. We'll get a little bit more into why it's important and what happens if we don't have it, and some important pitfalls we need to be careful of, because a culture of honor can definitely go sideways. We'll be right back. We are back, and with all things, the idea of a culture of honor can get confused for some other concepts that may or may not be healthy. So, Pastor Judah, can you help us out? A culture of honor is not blank.
A culture of honor is not a synonym with hierarchy.
Okay.
A culture of honor is not avoiding accountability. And a culture of honor is not the prioritization of image over integrity.
Image over integrity.
Hmm.
That's good. I like that. Josh, what would you add?
I'd say culture of honor is not about what you are allowed to say or not allowed to say.
Hmm.
I think it's way more about how we talk to one another, not so much about what. So it's not about, I'm not allowed to say this because I'm not the pastor, or I can't bring challenge, as Pastor Judah was saying, with the accountability. Like, that I'm not allowed to bring challenge because that's the senior pastor. I just have to go with it. I don't think that's the same thing.
No, that's called oppression.
Right. And so I think the culture of honor is also not a self-importance pride thing by the individuals and different responsibilities of like, you can't talk to me that way. Don't you know who I am? Type of a thing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the difference though. There is not that mentality of you can't talk to me that way. Don't you know who I am? But I think there is a mentality of you can't talk to anyone that
way. Yeah, that's right.
Because
that's
it right. is rude it's not because and of mean who and disrespectful.
Your title or your role here. It's because you are an image bearer.
Yeah.
I also think that a culture of honor has to be careful to not be performative.
What do you mean by that?
And I mean that there is this way that we can do kind of culture of honor things because people are watching.
Yeah.
I think this happens a lot at church where like there's a way that people behave. And I think that there's a tension because there is a way that I want to show up as my absolute best to my church, regardless of my role.
Yeah.
But also I don't want to pretend. And I think that it's important that a culture of honor is less about obligation and more about opportunities to love each other well.
Yeah. Josh, you mentioned earlier the Romans passage, outdo one another in showing honor. In Romans 12, it also says, let love be genuine. And you're right that when it's this, all right, we're going to get up on stage and someone's going to say all these flowery, nice, amazing things about the pastor to make it sound like, you know, he or she walks on water, when the truth is nobody likes them and they're arrogant and rude and everything else. And even the person talking is like, there's fear involved and all of that. Like, that's performative, right?
That's performative. And it's just flat out flattery.
Right. Yeah.
Which is not, which is not honor.
Which is not honor.
So that sense of honor must be rooted in a genuine truth. Care and concern and truth. That's a good word for it. And it's not this just sense of, well, we say nice things in public about one another, that a culture of honor starts when no one's watching, right? That's just a huge part of it. And it's interesting, you know, I think about in 1 Timothy chapter 5, it says this. It says, starting in verse 17, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. So there is this sense that those who look after the church are worthy of honor. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. Verse 19 then says, do not admit a charge against an elder except on the evidence of two or three witnesses. And that is so interesting to me because it is, first of all, acknowledging those who lead ought to be given honor. And you could extrapolate this to business or family or different things. I mean, the scripture doesn't specifically address that, but you could conceptually kind of bear that out. And then it, you know, goes on to talk about, you know, do not muzzle an ox. And verse 19 is really interesting to me because it says, do not admit a charge except on the evidence of two or three witnesses. So what does that mean? It does not mean that a culture of honor says the leader is insulated from accountability.
Right.
But it also says we're not just going to go off of hearsay and people running their mouths to try to take down each other just because they feel like it. So I think a culture of honor is not a place where anyone is above accountability. But it is a place where we're not just shouting down our leaders because we feel like it, or making these flippant comments, kind of rejecting things that, you know, maybe our leaders spend hours and hours and weeks and weeks working on. Right?
So I'm going to pull this into some more culture context outside of church and business even. But when we look at the political space and how we talk about leaders that we disagree with or that don't share our political views, we don't see a lot of honor in our society right now. We see a lot of name calling, a lot of thrashing, a lot of just abuse both ways, and doesn't really matter which side is doing what. And then, you know, anger begets more anger, frustration begets more frustration. And, you know, as we begin to dishonor one another, it ramps up how vicious things can get. And I think about, like, how do we speak about those we disagree with probably reveals more of our heart than almost anything else. And I think one of the things that honor society could do is it ratchets down the intensity of certain things because we're able to keep it about the issue and not about the person.
Yeah.
Versus when we don't have an honor culture, we are attacking this person or that person because they must be evil because they don't agree with me, type of an attitude. And that's really dangerous in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to make sure that we are honoring to the individual, but also being very honest mm-hmm. of the issues.
Yeah.
And that's a really tough balance because sometimes disagreement looks like dishonor when it's not.
Right.
Like I can disagree with Pastor Brian about all sorts of different things and still honor him and who he is and the authorities that he has.
And you're allowed to be wrong. It's okay.
And vice versa.
Did I say that out loud?
You did. It's your humility that we just really love. And we're allowed to do that. And sometimes disagreement gets looked at as dishonor, and that's not the same thing.
Yeah, that's not the same
thing. And I want to be real clear that we can honor those that we disagree with vehemently about really passionate subjects.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's important.
I almost wonder if it would be more helpful to call it a culture of integrity rather than a culture of honor, because I think integrity does a better job of encapsulating all this that we're talking about. And one of the things that I've been thinking about as I've been listening to you guys is how a culture of honor also has a very clear understanding of function and role, right?
Hmm.
And so, for example, one of our staff members, Maddie, she's over the cafe.
Mm-hmm.
If you put an org chart up, perhaps Pastor would be higher on an org chart, but the cafe belongs to her.
Right.
That is her ministry. That is what she runs. That is what she carries the burden for. So anything pertaining to the cafe, I yield to her. And even you'll see Pastor Lance do the same thing mm-hmm. with yielding to different staff members based on their role and function.
Yeah.
And I think that there can be some tension because that can feel like that can feel complicated in terms of power and decisions. But I think culture and honor, a culture of honor and integrity says, hey, because of your role and because of your function, that helps me with how I engage with you. And one example of this is a culture of honor says, Pastor Brian, you are my supervisor. So there is a level to which that I yield to you, even if I do disagree, even mm-hmm. if I. And so what 100%. We hope is that our leaders, whoever is making decisions, that they also are so honoring that it's not hard for other people to yield, that they're so integrous, that they're so trustworthy, that I can say, you know, Brian said do this, and even though I disagree, I'm going
to
do that.
And there's a reverse side of that, right? Where I have a responsibility to, I'm not just going to show up unannounced and start trying to run the show or call the shots on a Thursday night at BYA or at a leadership meeting, because you could go, oh, well, hey, I'm the boss, I'm the supervisor, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it would be incredibly dishonoring because mm-hmm. kind of in the Maddie example, like, no, that is your space. That is you doing your thing.
Correct.
If there's an issue,
you are the authority.
We'll talk about it, but mm-hmm. like, it is my job to come into your space and recognize your authority, not just so that the students see that, though that is important, but because it is legitimately your space, right?
Yeah.
So I think just honor is meant to flow
all of these
ways around. Briefly, what gets missed if we don't have a culture of honor? Like, why? I just think about, okay, if I'm listening to this going, all right, in my family, in my workplace, in my church, this is like, what am I missing out on if I don't care about a culture of honor or if I'm not working to create those things in the spaces I inhabit?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is the idea of unity, that without honor, more divisions end up taking place because it ends up becoming my opinion versus their opinion or my view or my self-righteousness or whatever that is begins to be more important than the whole of what's going on. And so you see this in families where one parent is respected more than the other and the kids just completely ignore one and then just go to the other. And there's lots of reasons for that. I get that. But it just leads to a lot of dysfunction within that family dynamic. You see this in politics. You see this in workplaces. You see this in churches. This is not unique to anything, but it's just when we don't honor one another, it opens up this ability to be divided over very trivial things, even and very important things too.
Yeah. Judah, how about you?
I think we don't have a culture of honor. One, it makes disagreements harder to navigate in a healthy way.
Yeah.
I think when we don't have a culture of honor, marginalized peoples in whatever space often get harmed.
Yeah.
Right? More so than when we have a culture of honor. I think when you don't have a culture of honor, also, it can really get in the way of what's the word that just means like we're doing things as quickly and as best as possible? What's that word?
Efficiency.
Because a part of like the culture of honor, if we go back to the cafe example, is that also Maddie knows what she's doing in her space. Mm-hmm. So in yielding and honoring that position, I'm allowing for the cafe to work out as best as it can. And then I think we miss out on this idea of collective agency and responsibility. And so it becomes very, very easy in a space where there's not a culture of honor for the 10% to do all of the work, to be burnt out, to be overlooked, that sort of thing, as opposed to when there's a culture of honor, a healthy culture of honor is an everybody kind of participates in and everybody shows up and brings their best.
Yeah.
And that means that this belongs to all of us. So there's shared responsibility, there's shared ownership, and a culture of honor.
Yeah, we miss out on that. Ephesians 6, Paul says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother." And then he says, "This is the first commandment with a promise." And this is referring back to the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, which say, "Honor your father and mother, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land." And then it goes on, much like with 1 Timothy, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." So there's not this like, hey, parents, do whatever you want. Kids, you need to honor them no matter what. There's high accountability for leaders throughout Scripture. But that sense of that it may go well for you in the land, I just cannot believe that that's this, that it's like a reward that's completely detached from the behavior, right? That there is this sense of orderliness that is meant to exist, and where that orderliness is lacking, we have chaos.
I also think that there is, in terms of church context, churches that have healthy, high honor cultures tend to be better at evangelism. When we think about the turn and burn sign holders, those generally are churches that don't have a healthy culture of honor. Yeah. They may have a high value for esteeming leadership, but not again, kind of grounded in this theology of being image bearers.
Yeah.
And so if we really want to go out and win people to Jesus, if we really want to spread the good news, building, shaping, and then regularly assessing the cultures, all the cultures in our churches, but a culture of honor, I think, will help us be more effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was just thinking about this as you guys were speaking, just of how I either develop or destroy a culture of honor within my own teams. And I was just thinking about over the years, as a leader, I've had a real heart that keep everything super relational. Hey, we're all in this together. We're all that, and it does lead to a bit of chaos at times. Where the reality is, I am somebody's boss, and I am accountable for the things that they do, and they are accountable for the things that they do.
Yeah,
but they're not accountable for the things that I do. They're like, and there's just a difference, and there's a weight to that of. Whatever, you know, since Maddie reports to me, whatever she does with the cafe, I am ultimately accountable to make sure that those things are going well. Mm-hmm. And when I treat everybody as the same thing, I'm like, oh, that's just, well, that's her problem. You know, that's, we get to do that at a peer level, but when there's a bit of a hierarchy, the buck stops somewhere and recognizing where that stops is really important. And that does change the way that we have relationships. Pastor Lance and I are friends outside of church, but we will never be like besties while I'm working here because it would be inappropriate in a lot of ways, but also it clouds the conversation or it clouds the culture a little bit to be like, hey, we're all equals. Because we're really not.
We're really not.
Equal in value, not in function.
Yeah, and that's good.
A part of what entails culture, right, is systems, right? And so when we think about culture, we need to talk about beliefs and values for sure, language and symbols for sure, but also traditions and systems. And so it can be a little bit, it is something to navigate because sometimes when we think about a culture of honor, we kind of only think about words. How are we speaking to people? But also a culture of honor says that we have a system that honors our God, that honors the goal, right? Whatever the goal of the cafe is or whatever we happen to be talking about, that honors roles, that honors functions. And so I think that a culture of honor does not say that there is no structure or that there are no rules. Again, that there's no accountability. And it doesn't say, a culture of honor doesn't say that there's no authority, right? In fact, a culture of honor places authority in the healthiest context and framework possible so that nobody's being harmed, but we're also being successful.
Yeah, that's right. So as we wrap up, just want to encourage you in whatever context you might find yourself, how can you contribute to the culture of honor? And if you'll forgive me for quoting myself, I want to go back to something I said earlier, that ultimately a culture of honor starts with giving honor more than requiring it of others. So how can we be a part of giving honor in the spaces that we go and then helpfully model by example what it looks like to honor others and then begin to create that culture in the places that we go? We'll be right back. We are back. We're playing a game today, and the game is I Know You're Lying, where we each come up with a category, and the other two hosts have to say how many items from that particular category they can name. They go back and forth trying to one-up each other until they get to the point where one person either thinks the other is lying or cannot name any more from that category, and then it is the responsibility of the other to put up or shut up. Josh, what is your category?
Songs written by Chris Tomlin. The man has written or performed. We're going to go with written, but also perform. I'll take performed if he's famous for performing.
Like, for example, he did not write Everlasting God, but he made it famous.
Well, you just cheat. Yeah, no, that is correct. That was written by Britton Brown.
Right. So that would count, though.
That would count.
Okay.
But yes, so famous, let's go with that. Famous Chris Tomlin songs.
There are so many, but it's like
there
I can't name
so
any.
There are so many, but it's almost like the Cheesecake Factory menu where there is so much that you don't even know where to begin.
What's on it? I don't know. A lot of stuff. I don't know. All right.
Everything.
I can name five.
I know you're lying. I don't know what songs that he's written. I mean, I've heard him sing lots of songs. I don't know. I know you're lying. Sorry.
Okay. Everlasting God.
Okay.
I feel like that shouldn't count because you did it before.
Because you already
said
it.
No way. That's one of my five. Oh my gosh. I'm almost going to say Your Love Endures Forever, but that's the same song. Forever.
Mm-hmm.
This Is Our God.
Mm-hmm.
He has definitely performed Wonderful Cross, and he's definitely performed Heart of Worship, but those are very low-hanging fruit. I'll acknowledge that. Good, Good Father. That's five,
yeah,
isn't
good,
it?
Good Father. That's fine.
All right. That was a pretty weak five for a guy who's like come out with like 50 albums.
How great is her God, amazing grace, my chains are gone. Our God, Jesus Messiah, whom shall I fear? Indescribable, I lift my hand at the cross. Holy Father, always resurrection. Yeah, I've got to listen.
Not to us. There's another one. There's
not
another
to
Chris,
us.
Chris
yep.
Tomlin one. All right. Okay.
God of the city. No?
Did you guys know that today, Wednesday, November 12th, 2025, the U.S. Mint is going to mint its very last penny?
No, I'm sitting here picturing Altoids. I it took me so long to figure out what you were talking about.
U.S. Mint like coins.
Uh-huh.
In honor of that, foreign currencies.
Oh gosh.
Oh, goodness. Okay. All right. All right.
Mr. World Traveler.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I can. Okay. Let me ask you this. Would you be okay if I look at my list of countries that I've traveled to? It doesn't have what their currency is, but just the list of countries
I've been to. I feel that would be a huge advantage to you.
I don't think this game
is you're allowed to have notes of any kind.
I can name three.
I can go five.
I can do seven.
I'm literally counting right now. All right, I can't do more than seven, so I know you're lying.
All right. Peso, dong, riel.
Where's riel from? Just after.
Riel. Brazil, maybe? I don't remember where riel is from.
Doesn't count.
It absolutely counts. It's absolutely a real foreign currency. The pound, the euro. The, how many did I say? Seven? Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, two more. The franc, the, oh goodness. And I will say this,
I'm
and
not
you
thinking
might,
about 800
you them. Might, you might think that this is cheating, but I'm going to stand on this. The Brixton pound. Which is separate than the British pound.
Questionable.
All right. So, but you also have the yen.
Yes.
The
yen.
Ruble.
Yes.
They have.
And rupee.
And rupee. And.
Go old school and say Deutschmark.
Deutschmark.
Or lira.
Lira.
Yeah. Pre euro in Italy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
The grivna Ukraine. And.
Okay. So bonus round here. What is the cost to the nearest hundredth of a cent of manufacturing one U.S. penny?
Sir, 10 cents?
I don't know.
Who can get... I'll give you a hint. It is more than one and less than five.
All right. 1.7.
Okay. Pastor Judah?
Two.
It is 3.69 cents per penny.
Well, all right. Which is why we no longer...
Which is why we no longer make them. Math. All right, Pastor Judah.
Okay, this may be too big of a category, and so I will not accept less than seven.
Oh, goodness.
Types of cheese. Not brands of cheese.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want American, but... Well, you could do American cheese, but not, like, Kraft.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Types of cheese, I will not accept less than five. So start with six, whoever goes first. There are hundreds.
Yeah, I can name seven.
I can name eight.
I can name nine.
I think I can get to 10. Yeah, I can get to 10.
I just don't want the stress of trying to come up with 11. So I know you're lying.
Dang it, I am. I was just trying to push him to 11. All right, so you've got... American cheddar, are you different types of cheddar or is cheddar all one?
I think probably cheddar should be one.
I agree.
I'm terrible at pronouncing things, and so you're going to have to give me ballpark. Rugeford?
Okay. It's not familiar, but I'll Google it.
Now you're just making up words.
Gruyere cheese, Gruyere, whatever.
Yeah.
You got blue. You've got. This is riveting radio podcast. Brie and Swiss.
Yep.
Provolone.
Yes. Delicious.
Pepper Jack.
Yes. Oh, he's cooking now.
Uh-huh. Two more. Think a smoky flavor cheese.
Whoa. We don't need to be giving hints
think
here.
Think a cheese with holes.
I already got Swiss.
Oh, did you say Swiss?
Okay.
Yeah, so got Gouda.
Oh, wait, that's 10.
That's 10?
Yeah,
I feel like I have 9. 11.
Oh, all right, yeah, I agree. 9, totally 9. He needs one more.
This cheese
Lindbergh?
Is named after our
Lindbergh,
place.
Lindbergh, there he is. There you go. Yep. He got to 10.
Some stinky cheeses.
Mm-hmm. Munster?
Yep.
Oh, Munster. I forgot about Munster.
Monterey.
Did you say regular Jack? Yeah.
I did not. I went
Havarti. I love Havarti.
Havarti's pretty good.
Havarti's great, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, well, whatever cheese is your favorite, we thank you for listening to this episode.
Have you guys ever tried
culture?
That or heard about that cheese that... A part of like what makes it that cheese is that maggots grow in it, like
Look
live
at me trying
maggots.
To end this episode, and he's talking about maggot cheese. We'll see you next time.
Enjoy.